Te reo ererangi o te mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
The National Council of Women of New Zealand held its annual conference in Otatahi Christchurch on October 5th, 2024 at the Commodore Hotel. The conference featured an opening address by the Honorary Nicola Grigg, Minister for Women, and sessions with local organizations working to support women and girls. Plains Media has captured this conference, and now we want to share it with you, our listeners. Next is Emma, Daryl, and Brittany from Good Shepherd, New Zealand.
My name is Emma. I'm the Chief Executive, and it's my absolute pleasure to be able to introduce my colleagues today. This is Beryl, who has a wealth of knowledge in the family violence space, and particularly now with us, works in the family violence economic harm space. So as Beryl says to me, it's the money piece of family violence, which is the topic that we're going to be speaking about today. Beryl is a great provider of inspiration and education and resource and support for me and my role, and in addition runs a really fantastic team and service that started a couple of years ago. 3 years ago?
Five for me now.
Five for you now. Mm. Go you, go you. Five for you. It's been that long. 5 years ago. And this is Brittany. So Brittany works in our social policy and advocacy space. New into the role quite recently and already making a huge impact. So really helping us to get a grip on what are the issues facing women and girls in New Zealand at the moment. We certainly all talk about it, but what is the change that we want to see? What is it that we really want to see happen? All the stuff that this room could, I mean, I'd love to just say, what are you guys, like, let's go, what is it, what are we all looking on? There wasn't something else I was going to say there, which is completely flown out my... at the moment the work that we're predominantly doing is in the space of financial well-being, and moving from there into what we call dignified income, and then the fundamentals of life. It's also connected, isn't it? So financial well-being is a really big focus for us at the moment in Aotearoa. So I will hand over to you both, if that's okay.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Kia ora koutou, ko Brittany Goodwin. As you mentioned, I'm Brittany. I'm the Senior Social Policy and Advocacy Advisor for Good Shepherd New Zealand. So just before we kick off, I do want to acknowledge the fact that we are going to be talking about abuse and harm today. I recognise that it can be a really challenging, difficult subject for people, so I just want to open that and recognise that people are going to be able to take that on and engage with the conversation to the degree that they're comfortable with. So as Emma mentioned, we are Good Shepherd, we are a charitable NGO. This is our core vision, our core mission here. So we exist to help women and girls experiencing harm or hardship. And what we want as our ideal future safe is for all women and girls to be safe, strong, well, and connected. So that's quite broad. So as Emma mentioned, within that, our main kind of focus is around financial well-being, family violence, economic harm, and dignified income. So we really want to work around building resilience and financial security for people, identifying social issues for women and girls, and how they intersect with the economic and financial spheres, as well as a strong push for my role in particular is advocating for changes in policies and practices to try and reduce those barriers to financial inclusion for women and for girls into their future lives. So as part of that, to do what we want to do and the change we want to see, we have a range of tools and services. So we currently deliver services, and we have offices across the country, Auckland, Christchurch and Wellington. And Beryl is our amazing Christchurch person here with us today. So we deliver a number of different services as part of our toolkit to try and reach financial well-being for our clients. So that includes no interest and no fee loans, financial well-being coaching and conversations. I think conversation is a really important part of that piece as well. Debt reduction, so negotiating with creditors and other lenders to try and help our clients get their debt reduced. We also offer a low-cost car insurance package. And we also do work in the advocacy space, as I mentioned. So what can we do more in our legislative space? How can we make sure that policy and practice at the regulatory level is appropriate for vulnerable people? And we also do, as you mentioned, the specialist support for family violence economic harm, and we'll go into more detail on that in a minute. So why are we here? Why do we care about financial wellbeing? Well, we know that it's a deeply gendered issue. So there are a number of intersecting factors that mean that women and girls in their daily lives suffer from more financial pressures and issues than others. So taking time out of work to care, we know that women still disproportionately are the main kind of carer in their relationships, and that can impact KiwiSaver balances really strongly. So the data there shows that KiwiSaver balances for males are 25% higher, and there are obviously a number of different factors, but particularly the care factor, taking time out from the workforce there. As the Minister and others have mentioned today, the gender pay gap is still a prevalent issue in New Zealand, so that's a really key factor, as well as labour market segregation, the fact that on average we do see women entering lower paid workforces across the board, which is obviously also impacted by intersectional issues such as ethnicity and a various variety of other factors as well. And so as this data point finds, so 29% first-year decline in incomes for separating women and an average rise for men. So that means that when partners separate, men are often better off because they're able to have better employment opportunities. There are a range of different factors, whereas women are worse off after a separation. And finally, as we've talked about, violence is a massively pervasive issue within New Zealand. A third of women report experiencing psychological violence, so that's a certain subset of violence within what we define as family violence. It's in an intimate partner relationship. So that's a huge proportion of women who are experiencing some form of psychological abuse in their lifetime. And we'll talk a little bit more about the impacts of the economic side in a minute. But lastly, also the impacts that harm has on people's employment opportunities. So Women's Refuge have done some really interesting research into economic abuse and found that the rate of full-time employment almost halves after experiencing economic abuse within a relationship. So that's a huge reduction in economic potential for women experiencing that abuse. So it's especially important to maintain healthy relationships when it comes to money. We know that it's really hard. You know, it can be really challenging for people in their relationships. It's a really taboo subject, especially if you've got a partner who makes a lot more money than another partner, you've got a partner who isn't currently working. Especially in New Zealand, I think we can have a bit of a phobia of talking about money. We don't like it. We feel like it's not the right thing to talk about. Politics, money, religion, we don't want to touch those things. But it's incredibly essential that we have those conversations in our relationships, because the more we can talk about it, the more we're able to kind of work through some of those issues and have it not become a problem. But we know that money can cause stress. One of the biggest things I think we find in relationships is that causes stress is money. People are worried about how much they have. Talking about it, it can be a bit of a sore spot in those relationships. And that's obviously also impacted by things like gender roles and traditional norms and expectations that still exist around what is the role of men and women in a relationship and in the home as well. So it takes work, and it can be really easy to slide into unhealthy practices. But also on the flip side of that, it can also be a really strong tool that people wield to abuse others. So we see that these economic harming behaviours can be a tool that others use as part of a pattern of violence and intentional coercive control over their partner. And that can lead to a number of really harmful outcomes. So what we talk about, the way we think about economic abuse as harm, is an imbalance of power and the wielding of control over another person using finances and economic factors, and that can cause really significant harm for people. So it can exist as part of a picture of violence, but also it can be standalone. So it can be physical violence, psychological violence, and economic abuse exists alongside that, but also there are things that can occur just on their own. So some of the examples are controlling bank accounts or monitoring bank accounts. Do you feel like you can't buy the groceries because you need to ask permission? Do you not access your funds? Are you given an allowance by your partner and you don't have access to any money outside of that? Your partner accumulating debt under your name, either by your own permission or behind your back. Forging of signatures. You know, you might be coerced into signing a joint loan, for example. the withholding of funds. So like in each end, you know, are you given an allowance or are you someone withholding that money from you so you can't pay the bills, you can't get your groceries, you can't get petrol to take your kids to school. As well as, yeah, coercing someone into joint spending. So the flip side of that being, okay, so your partner wants to buy a really expensive car. Are they coercing you into that decision, even though it's not a good financial option for you, or you feel like that's not something you would want to do? So there are a range of different kind of controlling behaviours that can manifest within economic abuse, and there are many, many others as well. So financial and economic abuse can cause serious economic harm, but also other forms of violence and abuse can cause that as well. So a woman experiencing physical violence may not be able to go to work, and then that reduces her income. It means that she doesn't have the same kind of income generating potential that she might have otherwise without that abuse. So one thing is that financial and economic abuse is actually listed within the Family Violence Act. It sits underneath psychological abuse in the Act, but there is no current suite of activity that exists to address economic harm at a government level. So you're probably all aware of things like Te Ao Rerekura, the action plan to prevent family sexual violence, but there is no economic harm related activity with that. So it is recognised in the legislation, there's just not really an associated work programme to address it. And it's something that we struggle with a lot in this space is that it's really invisible, it's less recognised, people often haven't heard of this as a form of violence and abuse. I think because things like physical abuse can be really visible, it's easier to recognise, even though there are a lot of different challenges in that space as well, but it's really subtle. Economic abuse is really subtle, and unless you know the signs or you're really keeping an eye out, then it can be really easy for it to go under the rug. And yet, despite that, some recent research has found that 15% of women have experienced some form of economic harm in an intimate partner relationship. So that's a high percentage, and that's, you know, we know in the abuse and violence space that there's often underreporting, so we don't know what that actual number might look like. So it's less recognised, but it's prevalent. And we also know that it can happen to anybody. So I think there's often a presumption in the violence and abuse space that this happens to a certain type of person or a certain socioeconomic status, and we know that that is fundamentally not the case. This happens at all levels of society, all socioeconomic statuses. It can happen anywhere, anytime, any place, in any kind of relationship. So it's everywhere. And it has really pervasive, ongoing impacts. So financial well-being, we talked about KiwiSaver, right? So that affects your retirement. That's, if you're a 20-year-old woman experiencing violence, that can impact you in your 60s and beyond. Your employment opportunities, that impacts you your entire life. So your financial well-being is impacted for a really long time past that point of that abuse happening, which obviously also has really significant mental well-being impacts for the person. And we know that there are associations with depression, anxiety, and all of those stress factors as well. And physical health. You know, violence has physical health impacts, and we know that economic abuse and financial abuse can go hand in hand with other forms of violence as well. And as I mentioned, the employment opportunities too. So there are really long-running effects across a number of different factors that people who experience economic abuse have to find their way through. So I'm going to pass over to Beryl, who's going to talk a little bit more about some of the on-the-ground work that we do and provide a couple of examples to give a bit of a look into how this can happen on the ground and what that looks like.
Awesome. Thanks, Brittany. Hi, everyone. So I'm Beryl. I'm the Manager of Financial Wellbeing Programs at Good Shepherd New Zealand. So as I mentioned, I've been with Good Shepherd for 5 years, and one of the services I manage is the Family Violence Economic Harm Service. And before that, I worked for a good 10 years in Christchurch at the Christchurch Women's Refuge, which became Aviva Family Violence Services. So kind of it's been my area of passion for some time. So just before I kind of get into sharing a story, can I get people to kind of raise their hand if they kind of have heard of economic harm before and they kind of know what it is? Oh, great, awesome. So everyone knows what I'm talking about. That's excellent. So I just wanted to start with an example of economic harm in a situation for a client that we've worked with. So she was referred to us from Women's Refuge. It was her second time staying at the safe house with her and her five children. Over the years, there'd been a number of incidents, police call-outs, protection order. Ex-partner had been imprisoned for a period of time. And it had always been a challenge for her to get away from the relationship and get away from him. So when we spoke to the client, we found that she had moved houses 6 times, trying to get away from him, and he always found out where she was. When he would do that, he would always come and damage her property, destroy her cars. And when she was at the refuge the second time, she was onto her 4th car. So she was left with a debt of $20,000 for buying that car. And so with her ex-partner running around the place always trying to find her, he found her at the refuge again, and he damaged that car. So she was left with a debt, a damaged car, a history of damaged cars, and that was how her story continued. The car wasn't drivable, so it had to be dealt with. Because she had moved 6 times to a number of houses, she had $100,000 debt to work and income, trying to survive violent relationships with the children, cars damaged, moving houses, getting new things set up. And when she finally left the refuge, she got into a Kāinga Ora house that the refuge were able to support her with. And she'd been with a power company for years, to the extent that she had a payment plan through her benefit. It's fine. A payment plan through her benefit that had been reoccurring for so long. And because she'd been moving so often, the power company hadn't been able to get hold of her. She was actually in credit $2,000. But because she'd been with them all this long, she was hoping that when she went into a Kāinga or a house, that they would just give her power. But no, her credit rating was damaged because her ex-partner had been using her credit. So even though she had this history with them and $2,000 credit, they wouldn't give her power. So she was referred to us and some of the things we were able to do. So 100K debt to government debt, that's a huge problem in New Zealand. We have our beautiful advocacy team here who are working on that. It is nothing that we can really deal with at service level. The best we could do in that case was get her repayments down from $98 a week to $30 a week. She won't pay it in a lifetime. And all due to family violence. So that's a whole other conversation. With her car, when we found out she had purchased this car, we contacted the creditors and we found out that actually the car would never have been affordable for her, given her situation. They should never have given her a loan. So there was a lot of fees and extra costs on it. So they removed all those. They changed the payment plan so she can afford it. That was great. Then it got damaged. So we contacted the creditors again, explained the story, and they said, you know what, we're going to go pick it up and we're going to wipe the debt for her. Great. Still no car. So she had to use her KiwiSaver hardship to get a car. That was the only way she could get it, which goes back to that KiwiSaver challenge for women. Particularly in family violence, it's often the only option they have. We contacted the power company. We managed to get her $2,000 credit paid out to her. We got her power connected, and we were able to get her power and internet capped at $200 a month for the next 6 months to help her get re-established. We also worked with Woven Earth up in Auckland, who were able to furnish her new house. So that was a cool outcome, but there's still so many things that we weren't able to do. I can hear some really good conversations, and if we had time, it'd be really good to kind of talk about some of those, so hopefully we have a few minutes at the end. So I will just carry on. So we have a Family Violence Economic Harm Service, which was piloted about, yes, I've been with Goodgee, but 5 years, it was piloted about 3 years ago. So the service has been running for three years. We've got a couple of economic harm specialists who are based here in Christchurch, but they work across New Zealand supporting people. So we support people to unravel the money piece of family violence. That's what I always call it. We negotiate with creditors to address unjust and unreasonable debt. We help people to understand their rights, access entitlements, and use family financial wellbeing tools like our no-interest loans. We help build confidence and support people to gain control over their finance again and build their financial capability. And we work alongside services like Women's Refuge, the police, ACC, financial mentors, banks and hardship teams. And we help to improve the financial services and processes to prevent and abuse and reduce harm. So we work really closely with Brittany around the kind of the gaps that we see and the issues that we see and kind of feed into the work that she does in the advocacy space. So these are our stats, which are really exciting actually. I just got them pulled yesterday. So in the last 12 months, we have had 230 clients engaged. 94% of them were female, so we have had some men. The total debt, not including government debt, that they came to us with that was caused due to family violence and economic harm was over $2 million. And we've been able to reduce in the last 12 months over $800,000 worth of debt. So for the people who we have... Yes, two in Christchurch, yeah. Yeah, no, we do. yeah, so on average for the people we had got reductions for, it was $10,000. So we do have to give some credit to banks and creditors in the places who are willing to work with us and who we are having the hard conversations with and are starting to understand that economic abuse, economic harm, financial harm is not hardship. It results in hardship, absolutely, but it's caused by actions other people are taking. So it's quite a difference. What we haven't got up on there, but I thought it's worth mentioning, is that the government debt that we have recorded on our system was $433,622. So many of those women have been left with debt to government, which will be from family violence. And if one day we can claw into the money from, what is it called that I keep banging on about? Proceeds of crime. That's where I want to claw some money from, and get some there. So I was just going to share another slightly different story with you. So this one was an employee who'd been working at a catering company for 5 years, and had been experiencing economic harm in silence the whole time. So some of the employees at the organisation noticed that the staff member had been upset and was in the bathroom and was concerned. She didn't have money for a phone, she didn't have money for the bus. She was really young, she was pregnant, had limited English and little knowledge of her rights in New Zealand. So she was here on a work visa. Since she started her job, she never had access to her own money in the bank account. So her pay was getting paid into a bank account that she had no access to. So she was given from her, she lived with her auntie and a few other family members, she was given $20 a week for the bus, that's it. So her employer was able to support her to reach out to Women's Refuge, get accommodation sorted, looked at some appointments, took her to appointments she needed and helped her set up a bank account to gain control of her money. The other cool thing that we worked with the employer with was to develop an organisational policy to make sure this didn't happen again. So that was a really, really cool thing that we did. Again, thinking about the invisibility of that, no one would have known. It would have carried on had she have not been upset and someone noticed. So thinking about that, how could we better recognise the signs of economic harm in our friends? And thank you so much.